a little bit of history. Beginning with Reverend Grace Faust in the mid-50s, 1956 to be exact, followed by Dr. Max Ballard and myself, and now by our present ministers, for almost 60 years in this sanctuary, we have been reminded almost weekly that every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth is a law unto themselves. We've been reminded over and over again that our experiences have nothing to do with the time of our birth, or the place where we were born, or even with the family into which we were born. In other words, no one has actually ever decided for any of us what we were to be, whether school teachers, truck drivers, doctors, other than ourselves. Now, it is very possible that we may have been influenced by someone whom we respected and admired, but the final decision, sooner or later, is always ours. Therefore, contrary to popular belief, whether we're happy and fulfilled or miserable and lonely, whether we find ourselves healthy or sick, tall or short, no power on heaven and earth has ever had anything to do with it. It has everything to do with the individual, him or herself. A man once wrote, "Beauty is in the eye of the beholder." And I say to you, as is everything in our lives, opportunities, challenges, trials, promotions, tribulations, everything is in the eye of the beholder. It's all relative. Thinking makes it so. For we never see things as they are, but as we are in consciousness. And yet there are thousands upon thousands of people who are praying to God that He change their lives for the better, when He had nothing to do with it in the first place. I dare say that many of us have at one time or another, probably all of us have at one time or another, talked to God about the things that are wrong in our lives, whether it's a matter of health, or a relationship gone bad, financial situations, whatever the purpose of our prayer, it is nothing more than an intense emotional effort on our part to convince God that He do something about it. And we do this over and over again, and we've done it for years with little, if anything, to show for it. Until one day we come across a teaching called divine science. And little by little we begin to change not only the way we see God, but the way we've prayed to God for as long as we can remember. And so it is that slowly we begin to understand that life has allowed each one of us to create for ourselves our own situations, our own conditions, our own place in life. In other words, we all have the freedom to succeed as well as the freedom to fail. And we either succeed or fail, not because of God, not because of the way the stars were aligned on the day we were born, but because of the way we feel about life in general, and about ourselves in particular. Or in the words of the Bible, as a man thinks with feeling, so we see in the world. And speaking of the Bible, God knows how many people there are that read the Bible on a daily basis, hoping that the promises in the Bible are true. But sooner or later we discover that hope or wish or even anticipation never brings about anything to anyone. What the Bible teaches, and the promises are true, but what the Bible teaches is that there is law and order in life. In other words, it teaches that there is a basic principle that lies back and within each one of us. A principle that is totally responsive to the individual, whether male or female, whether black, white, brown, green, yellow, young, old, it doesn't matter. But a principle that responds to every man, woman, and child in perfect harmony to the way in which they feel about life and about themselves. Truly, you are a law unto yourselves. This creative principle, call it God if you wish, is not moved by flowery language or by beautiful phrases, the smell of incense, totally alien to this principle. It knows nothing about majestic cathedrals or amulets or rosaries or music of any kind, but is totally responsive to what comes from the heart. Life responds to the heart, to our feeling natures. Life responds to that prayer that has no words, but is immersed and saturated in a very particular feeling. Let me ask you this morning, at a very personal level, have you ever evaluated your feelings? For example, in the privacy of your own mind, have you ever really questioned how you feel about your home, the family into which you were born? Proud? Ashamed? Perhaps embarrassed? Grateful? What about the choice of your career? Are you pleased or not? How about the way you look? Your body? Have you ever questioned what your feelings are about your relationships with people in general? How do you feel when you're in the presence of the sick and old and mentally challenged? In the presence of gays? In the presence of politicians? How do you feel about them? It's how we feel, not only about people, but of the food we eat, and about the changes taking place in our country, even as I speak. Is there a sense of apprehension, fear, or is there confidence, trust? This is what we perpetuate in our lives and not what we say to God or to one another. Which is why one man thousands of years ago cautioned us to keep our feelings under control, for out of them come the issues of life. And so it is that regardless of where we stand on the ladder of lack or abundance, on the ladder of hate or love, whether we find ourselves forgiving or whether we find ourselves hanging on to those grudges that have come upon us, wherever we stand, it does not change the truth that you and I are now and have always been a child of God. But But you and I, and millions of others in different degrees, have wasted years of great living because of ignorance. Because we have not been aware that our thinking needs to be disciplined, controlled. But when we discover who we are and what we are, not only as an understanding, but as a personal sense of identification, our entire world begins to change for the better. As Emmett Fox wrote, why does it change for the better? Because life is consciousness. Life, the life you and I are experiencing right now, this life is the result of our habitual patterns of thoughts. You're in charge, but only of your thoughts, not of anyone else. Most of us are familiar with the story of the prodigal son. He had a difficult life, and he too wanted to change it for the better. But keep in mind that the story is not about a single individual who lived thousands of years ago. It's the story of mankind in general, the human race as it exists right now. For the most part, the entire human race is in need of one thing or another, simply because as of yet, it is not aware of its heritage. And so it is that the prodigal, the human race, is experiencing all kinds of hardships and deprivations, not only physical pain, but emotional hurt, a sense of loss, you name it. We've all experienced these qualities of life. But the moment an individual chooses to leave all and turn within, a new experience begins to take place. Now, concerning the story of the prodigal, keep in mind that this individual, quote, does not need to go anywhere. He simply empties his mind and turns within. And at that moment, free from human beliefs and convictions and opinions, everything at that instant in the Father's house is his. We're talking about an activity that takes place nowhere else but within our own consciousness. We're talking about a very personal and intimate realization, an inner experience. Which is why the Christ Jesus tells us that the first and the greatest of the commandments is to love with all of our hearts and all of our minds and all of our strength. As a matter of fact, thousands of years ago, the prophet Ezekiel heard a voice come from within him saying, cast off your transgressions and make you a new heart. In other words, it's about time that you established a new relationship with life. Which is why the man Jesus was also adamant. He insisted that we call no man on earth our father, that we dare not trace our ancestry to the physical. He said, one is your father, your source, and that one is God. He is thy life. For those of you who have read the Bible and taken the Bible classes, you will discover that when we study the life of the man Jesus, there is no record whatsoever that he ever resisted anything or anyone. He didn't even try to change the oppressive government of his day, as thousands of people are doing all over the world. For he knew that there is no power, none whatsoever, separate and apart from God. He reminded us that in the degree that we identified with God, that in that degree we would be blessed. Saying, he that abideth in God, and God in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. As a matter of fact, Paul called our human natures the transgressions of the prophet Ezekiel. The transgressions and the human nature, one and the same thing. Paul referred to this state of mind as the old man. And this old man is in all of us, more so in some than in others. And Paul tells us that this old man is not under the law of God, and neither indeed can be. That as men and women filled with human beliefs and convictions and opinions, he said that we're not spiritual, regardless of what we say to one another. He went so far as to say that we cannot even understand the things of God as ordinary human beings. That we need to get a new identification. That we need to put off our transgressions, our human natures, and get a new mind. As the prophet was told, cast off your transgressions. Put off the old man and make you a new heart. So where do we begin? I say to you this morning that we've already begun. Else you would not be here this morning. It began on the day we started looking for a higher meaning in life. Something beyond new cars and new gadgets. Beyond pretty faces and more money in the bank. And so it is that we began looking in books and in classes and in churches. Talking to ministers and priests and rabbis. Until we discovered that God was never to be found out here. In the outer, but within ourselves. And it is here that we begin to get a new understanding. Not a realization yet, but a new understanding. But that understanding is not enough. Even though we are beginning to put off our transgressions, and we're beginning to get a new mind and a new heart, we're still standing at the gate of the promised land. Something for all of us to keep in mind. One man, I believe it was C.S. Lewis, once said, all progress, so many words, all progress is backwards. All of it. And it is. Study the Bible. It is the return of the soul to its source. It is a return to that rock from whence we are hewn. It is the return of the prodigal to its father's house. And this, my friends, is what Palm Sunday is all about. A return to the beginning. The Christian world has set aside this day, Palm Sunday, to honor two things. A man and an event in this man's life. As a matter of fact, over the years there have been many days that have been set aside to honor certain individuals and certain events. George Washington's birthday is a case in point. The 4th of July is another. But many times the reason for these celebrations are forgotten and no longer matter. Washington's birthday is now a day to stay home from work and to take advantage of sales. 4th of July. It's all about parades and fireworks and more sales. Yesterday is Palm Sunday. This is the day that the man Jesus entered Jerusalem. And we were told that he was greeted by hundreds of people by laying palm branches along his path. My friends, so many times we get so caught up by the celebrations that we forget the significance of the events. All of the rituals and the ceremonies and the pageantries of Palm Sunday have nothing to do with what it really means for each one of us, spiritually speaking. Nothing whatsoever. This day becomes meaningful only when the experience becomes an activity within our own consciousness. The significance of Palm Sunday is that it involves a spiritual principle that transforms an ordinary son of man into a son of God. That's the significance of Palm Sunday. And I'll say it again. That's what Palm Sunday is all about. The transformation of the son of man into a son of God. And so it is that we could only individually get beyond the people who insist and affirm and are reaffirming a human condition. If you and I could only lift our consciousness to that place where truth abides in full, then and only then you yourself will hear the words coming from within. Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. This is what Palm Sunday is all about. It's about you and it's about me. It's about the individual. It's about you and me as we prepare ourselves to enter into a state of peace that the world knows not of. And so I say to you this morning, who knows? Perhaps some of us here this morning is willing to make a commitment to be still, to leave all and say within themselves, God, from this day forward, no longer my will, but thine be done. Shall we make this lesson practical? There's no reason why we cannot. Let us just place your body in a position that it will not call attention to itself and relax it. And just know that at this very moment, God is here. With all of its love and all of its wisdom and all of its power. Nothing to hurt is here and now. Nothing to be hurt is here and now. And so for the next few moments, open yourselves to this presence. It lifts us beyond anything and everything of this world into a consciousness that is not of this world. And so just be still. Be still. And allow yourselves to be blessed in the silence where your soul may meet its God. This presence in which we now find ourselves, O most wondrous God, we give you thanks. And so it is that the Lord blesses you and keeps you. The Lord shines its love upon you and is gracious unto you. It is He that lifts your consciousness and gives you peace.